that's how I first learned about it and how I became, you know, really excited. I'm grateful to be part of a very supportive community here, and they were able to help sponsor me. I went with, gosh, people from all across the country. We started off in Egypt and eventually did get into Gaza for a little less than 24 hours, but it was, honest to God, one of the most amazing experiences of my entire life, being able to meet the people in Gaza, see that, you know, despite their unbelievable circumstances, they remain hopeful that there will be a day that they can actually have a thriving, you know, society, live, you know, normal lives like so many other people around the world. And it was honestly just heart-wrenching to see that, and to know that, you know, we can help and we can continue to send aid there, and we can then come back here and speak about our experiences and let people know what's going on, so we can affect some kind of change that will be meaningful for them.
We appreciate everything you've done for the people of Gaza. We appreciate everything you've done for Palestine, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our heart, and we're happy that you're here. Mr. George Geller.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Distinguished elders, distinguished visitors, brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum. The special relationship between the United States and so-called Israel is damaging to the United States. And I'm here to argue that the American people should ask their government to follow a policy in the Middle East which is in the interests of the people of the United States rather than the people of another country thousands of miles away, which treats them with contempt in any case. You wouldn't think, when you saw Netanyahu's behavior in the White House, which was so outrageous that President Obama got up and walked out of his own office, leaving Netanyahu sitting there, telling him to give me a call when you have something to say, you wouldn't think that the US taxpayer gives $7 million every single day of every year to this so-called Israel. $7 million, plus the military hardware that they get to test out and try on real-life targets for free, plus the private philanthropy which is generated on university campuses and in cities and towns throughout the United States, which more than doubles that amount of $7 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money that you could be spending on yourselves, or maybe even some of which you could spend on genuinely poor countries that need it, rather than on continuing to finance and to arm this aggressive, law-breaking, rogue state. The fact that no one talks about Israel in these terms in the United States political class is the reason I have to be here. It would be far better if there were American politicians who would tell this truth, then I could stay home. But they don't. And we have to change things so that they feel emboldened to do so, so that they feel that they can do so without committing electoral suicide. That's part of our job.
And much can be made about the fine campaign that Pennsylvania Democratic senatorial candidate Joe Sestak ran. But consider this. Arlen Specter, whom he defeated, is 80 years old. Had he won the nomination and gone on to win in November, he would have been 86 at the end of another six-year term, assuming he lived out that tenure. But Specter isn't the only aging politician in Congress. West Virginia Senator Robert Byrd is over 80. New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg is over 85. Former Alaska Republican Senator Ted Stevens was 85 when he lost re-election in 2008. And the late Strom Thurmond was in the Senate until he was 100 years old. Sorry if this sounds like I'm picking on old people, but I question one's stamina and the ability to think and act quickly when one reaches a certain age. And 80 years old is such an age. Being a politician is a demanding job. It requires people who can think and act quickly and who have enough stamina to do so on an ongoing basis. At some point, these politicians, as they age, should give up the job. That's from Herb Vermaas in Omaha.
We celebrate the presence in our movement here in the United States and around the world and in so-called Israel itself of the many Jewish people who stand for justice for Palestine. And we will not accept that by speaking out against the racist apartheid ideology of Zionism that we are in any way against Jews. We simply won't accept it at all. I don't think I've spoken to you about what happened to us in February, but it's worth doing so for a few minutes this evening. 550 of us drove all the way from London in our ambulances, in our vehicles filled with aid, through Europe, into Greece, from Greece into Turkey, where we aligned ourselves with the greatest humanitarian organization I have ever met anywhere in the world, the Turkish organization IHH, IHA in Turkish, $120 million a year humanitarian organization working all over the world, but with special emphasis on Palestine. When we 550, with hundreds of vehicles, arrived at the port of Al Arish in Egypt, having had to detour from Aqaba all the way back to Syria to take aeroplanes and charter a huge ship to take our vehicles to Al Arish, and then fly in three separate aeroplanes to Al Arish Airport, which is a tiny airstrip, because of the intransigence of the Egyptian government. Once there in the port, as you will have seen on television, we were locked up like animals day after day. No one was allowed out. No one was allowed in. There were no toilet facilities. We had a large number of women on our convoy who didn't even have a toilet to go to, nor a place to wash in. We were treated like the worst kind of criminals by an Arab Muslim country when all we were trying to do was take medicine to the Palestinian people who were dying for the want of it, just a few kilometers from where we were imprisoned. One day, Palestine will be free. In the United States of America, black people were slaves, bought and sold as human beasts of burden. They were in chains, worked to death, prey to every whim of their master, however venal. The White House itself was built by the hands of black slaves in America. When I started out in this cause in the midsummer of 1975, 35 years ago, almost exactly, I believed that one day I myself would walk in a free Palestine. I don't know any longer if that's true, but I promise you this, that the last word on my lips on this earth will be Palestine, and that if not me, my son will walk in free Palestine. Wassalamu alaikum. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Finally, I say this, as I've said now twice already this evening, there is no more important battleground than here, and you are the people in that intellectual battle. There's no point in saying Obama hasn't done this, Obama hasn't said that. We have to change the political conditions here in the country so that Obama can say and do things that he needs to say and do. The Israel lobby in the United States alone, let alone what they're sending to Israel, is spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year on propaganda in this country. They're spending millions of dollars just sending people to Israel to persuade them that that's what it's called. They're taking full-page ads in the New York Times, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, to tell people that Jerusalem means nothing to Muslims. It's not even mentioned in the Quran. Palestine is of no religious significance to Muslims. Well, there are just as many Muslims in America as there are Jews. The Muslims in America are just as wealthy and just as talented as the Jews in America. And many of the Jews in America are on our side, whilst all of the Muslims in America ought to be on our side. There's no reason why you couldn't raise $300 million a year. There's no reason why you couldn't have full-page ads in the New York Times. It's a matter of being prepared to put our money where our mouth is, to stand up and be counted so that that flag can fly in Jerusalem in our lifetime or in our children's lifetime. Wassalamu alaikum. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, this is more or less the end of the great speaking tour of the United States of America. I've had an enormously encouraging time here. I've spoken all over the country, from the north in Michigan, right down to Florida and Texas. I've addressed audiences numbering in the thousands. I've raised over $1 million for the Muslim Legal Fund of America and for American Muslims for Palestine. It's been a terrific tour. The Muslim community in America is heavily engaged in the question of Palestine, and particularly their young people. The young people here, even if they've never set foot in Palestine, are deeply involved in the subject and determined to return to their homeland one day. If not for good, then at least to be able to freely travel there. I'm encouraged, too, that despite the noises off of the Zionist lobby, which tried at every turn to have me banned from the country, to have me silenced, have completely failed. I've come and gone in the United States on a weekly basis for around 5 weeks and traveled thousands of miles all across the country. You know, the attempt to gag free speech, the attempt to silence critics of the bizarre special relationship between the United States and Israel has failed. So I think that this is a turning point in America. I've tried to play a small part, very small part, in throwing my tuppence worth in to try and influence that debate. It might not be going on a public level, but General Petraeus's remark indicates that under the surface, in the U.S. administration, there's a great deal of turmoil about that relationship between the U.S. and Israel. Time will tell whether the professorial president, Barack Hussein Obama, will change America's role in the Middle East. Certainly, he doesn't have the alibi that the last fellow did of being an imbecile. Ow, just so-